As we all know, there is a wave of discussion around circular economy. We had waves of discussion, around climate change. Another wave here around circular economy. Next wave, maybe water in 2020. So a key thing is that circular economy is part of sustainable development, at least in my own personal view. It is not a magic bullet. It is not the only game in town. Despite what you might be hearing from the Netherlands, who've set themselves up as a circular economy hotspot, I keep coming across people from the Netherlands recently who are recently getting involved in the agenda, who seem to be saying, circular economy is everything, it will solve everything. Well, it's part of the discussion. And I think it's important to put this in context of a broader sustainability approach, particularly at a company level. Purely focusing on this issue, ignoring water and energy, you're going to be going down the wrong direction. You've got to keep that picture, despite what some people may say to you. In my personal opinion, happy to hear dissenters at any stage after I've done the chat. So it is part of a broader picture, although there will be various things emerge that will take you down that, may take you down that loop. So I personally think the 17 goals for sustainable development are important. I was a little bit skeptical when they came out, and I thought, this is going to be Agenda 21 again, Millennium goals, partial buy-in, but there seems to be quite a lot of government and policy buy-in to this, particularly using it as a framework for interpretation and reporting. Particularly leadership like it, because they can see maybe we don't perform on all of these, but there's at least one or two that we can perform on. So I think it's going to be important on a corporate level. So the first point is, in circular economy, its context. It fits within a broader sustainability agenda, in my personal opinion. Systems are important, systems thinking. And when we were trialing the standard, we trialed the BS 8001, which I'll come back to in a bit. We unusually for standards, we trialed it with 10 companies, the key principles of this. When we went into various organizations, people, whether they were running the product side or the estate side in organizations, we used the word systems thinking. And despite probably quite a lot of us understanding what that might mean, practitioners don't necessarily understand. They see this as jargon. So as always, the issue is how we acknowledge the systemic elements of circular economy but avoid the jargon. Anyway, so there's issues to do with language. So essentially within circular economy thinking, I'm just building on the well-known, and some people have banned this Elaine MacArthur Foundation model here in presentations, but I still think it's quite useful. This idea of looking at a biological system and a technical system. So the idea of maximizing resource use within these systems. In the biological systems, cotton into garments back in the ground. In technical systems, trying to extend the life of products through repair, remanufacturing, etc. So essentially, keeping and retaining those materials within the system. And the important thing, it's a materials-based thought process, but also materials are in products. So this is creating some challenges as we're asking and looking at things in different perspectives. A lot of discussion around business models in this area. But for many organizations, particularly large organizations that have existed for a long time, unless they have major opportunities or threats, they won't want to change their business model. So more of the conversation is about how could you re-engineer the business model to take account of circular economy, if that's indeed how you see it. More of the opportunities on the business model are perhaps from the disruptive innovators, the small startups. So it's really thinking about perspective here. And also, organizations may not, if they choose to look at circular economy, contrary to a number of discussions, they may not want to look at the business model, as I was saying. They may want to trial looking at a product. What does a circular laptop look like? What does choosing a process and looking at what circularity means in a process. So it's breaking it down to product, process, and new business model. It's not all about new business models, again, in my personal opinion. What you've seen is, again, this, you know, for a number of in the room will recognize that a lot of discussion around resource efficiency, resource productivity in places like Japan and Germany. Sorry, I keep moving the natural inclination to move the microphone down, but I will try and keep it up. So as we know, countries like Japan really focus on resource efficiency from the mid-90s. They don't know natural resources, Germany, you know, similarly. So the concept of resource efficiency, resource of productivity, is quite an old concept and been driven in certain countries. But essentially, the rebrand, you know, a lot of this has been rebranded under circular economy, and has really been, in a sense, popularized, in my opinion, by Elaine MacArthur Foundation. They've been exceptional. Let's say in my 25 to 30 years, in terms of the impact they've had in a relatively short time scale, it's exceptional. You know, there are reasons why that. Well, that I believe that we haven't got time to go into. But anyway, at this point that there's some sort of point of inflection around about the global downturn in 2008, when this whole issue of critical materials, etc., still difficult to quite pinpoint when the issues really started to come back up on the agenda on a broader base, in my opinion. So anyway, this in many ways is a repackaging, rebranding, but it's going further than that now, I think. So what you've seen is a number of the companies really have started to really try and think through the, you know, what does this really mean to us? And I always bring Philips up, particularly from the product side, because they've had since the early 90s something called the six focal areas of eco-design, which has been a very programmed approach into their product development process about the things they think about in product development. And this has been well grooved, well tested, but literally about 2 or 3 months ago, they've changed one of those six focal areas to pick up circularity. So that, I think that's significant, because they know what they're doing on these issues. So companies, even the more experienced companies, are really thinking about this, and then they're looking at cascades on this, servicing, refurbishment, parts recycling, and materials recycling at the end of the cascades. Similarly, HP, I've got a similar model, and you're going to see more companies coming out with this. In certain sectors, they're more evolved, you know, in some of the thinking. So the photocopier sector, Xerox, Ricoh have something called their Comet system, which is a whole system that's existed for, you know, a decade plus. So next key issue, I believe, is language. So there's still, you know, within the, let's call it, without sounding again too Trumpian, the lexicon of circular economy, you know, there's still not a clarity over some of the language even. I've come across examples of white goods refurbishers who've been in that business for a long time saying they're in the recycling business. They're not in materials recycling, but it's still not even a common view on, you know, what does remanufacturing mean? What does refurbishment mean? What does recycling mean? And that's why in the standard we've got a very extensive terminology section, much bigger than inverted commas normal standard, because there's so much terminology and lack of clarity over some of the words. Policy level, very important in circular economy. So it's looking at the demand and supply side policy initiatives. Perhaps borrowing, if the Commission really wants to drive forward its circular economy package, it shouldn't forget, or circular economy thinking within the European economy, it shouldn't forget a lot of the policy work it did in the late 90s, early 2000s around integrated product policy, where we're looking at the demand side and the supply. It's been forgotten. So there's lessons to learn from the past within policymakers. Also, we've seen already, you know, unsurprisingly, Sweden now setting up incentives in their policy system to try and incentivize repair. So you're seeing, you know, at a commission and national level, different activities going on. Business model is very important, you know, but it's not the only game in town. In a sense, business models all organisation approaches to deliver more value. Key issue is, you know, very difficult to re-engineer a global transnational Fortune 500 to a circular economy approach. Very complex. Again, within the standards work, the case studies, I'm not going to name names, but some organisations that are taking, positioning themselves very strongly on circular economy, nowhere as far down the line in practice as the rhetoric might suggest. I see potentially some of the more interesting things, well, not necessarily interesting, but evolving things from startups. Companies like iFixit.com, who essentially have set up an approach where they produce high-quality tutorials showing individuals how to diagnose problems with their products and then fix their products. And then the business model is they sell you the tools and the equipment to fix the product. But the key thing is market education. They're educating the consumer. But I also see what we're now starting to see around repair is a whole group of more, for a variety of reasons, people who are more confident or pissed off with product built-in product obsolescence who want to try and fix their products. We now see 1,200 repair cafes around the world that's facilitating that process. You see iFixit. Also companies like eSpares, who is a component manufacturer, they sell B2B components that are now selling directly to consumers because they see individuals wanting to fix their washing machine themselves, etc., etc. I've got to keep the momentum going or else I'm going to run out of time here. So infrastructure is another issue. How do we build or retrofit the appropriate infrastructure to enable circular economy? What we've seen in Japan is in the recycling area, when their equivalent of the Wii law, for those of you who may know the sector, it's a recycling law in the electronic sector. They brought in a similar law in Japan to Europe. The day their law opened in Japan, the day 50 recycling factories opened. So you've got this systemic approach. In Europe, you've got this very, you know, individual systemic. So how do we build the infrastructure to enable circular economy? Very important. Factories, you know, remanufacturing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Technology. We're starting to see different types of technology emerging. So Apple have their Liam robot now that can disassemble iPhones. They're keeping within their system. So they, for a variety of reasons, they are looking at, you know, the whole keeping those Apple products within the Apple system. Within Veolia, they also have now a robotic approach to the disassembly of TVs. But it's a sort of different approach. That's a waste management or resources management company. So there are different types of technological requirements. 3D printing, another area. There are the first phases of 3D printers that are emerging that can use recyclate and biopolymers. New types of materials. We need new types of materials that are unzippable at the end of life. So again, when there's examples with the legislation in electronics, this idea of shape memory plastics and shape memory alloys that basically will retain their shape. So there's a lot of work, again, gets forgotten, around the 2000s at in Brunel, around this idea of building a mobile phone, for example, that under a certain process heat, the screws would lose their thread. So you could snap them apart, extract the components. Similarly, they did work on so there's stuff that we've forgotten about even before we've got there. So there's a lot of work being done in materials and also disassembly in German technical universities, 2000s, etc. So closing, end of life, and closing the loop. Did some work in Hong Kong, 20 individual companies, mostly business-to-business companies. One of 20 companies had any idea what happened to their product at the end of life because they sold their product into the chain. So there's this big issue, you know, in, you know, where you sit in the chain. People don't know their final customers, how you can go, you know, back to reconnect with your customers, etc., etc., if you're going to entirely close the loop. Again, consumers put forward, cradle-to-cradle certified logos. Do they understand that? Suggest not. Lessons from eco-labelling is you need to build awareness and understanding before you start putting labels on things. So there's a real issue about building, engaging consumers in the discussion, etc., etc. I'm so lateral sometimes that I forget what my images relate to, but I think that means implementation, which I will just double check just to make sure. So in terms of implementation, let's go with it anyway, there's people-orientated elements and technology elements. And of course, we need to be, engaged in, processes to engage people both, on a human level and on a technical level. And finishing here in terms of the future, thinking about what circular economy means in terms of, for example, Industry 4.0, smart cities, smart companies, Internet of Things. What's going to happen to all these devices that have sensors in them? That is going to be pervasive in products, pervasive in waste bins, etc., etc. And how do we better utilize that information? Do we have smart dumpsters that basically a light comes on when they're full? I don't know. But anyway, if Industry 4.0 progresses as the way, at the moment it's technology push, it's not industry pull, circularity and broader sustainability aspects should be a part of that. So I really do need it to finish up there on that and move through the other things very quickly. So basically, British Standard BS 8001, we believe it is the first specific standard on implementing circular economy principles in organisations. Many vertical standards, something like 200, the initial audit identified around vertical elements around it, materials, etc., etc. But it's the first one that's about implementing the principles in organisations. I won't go through all of this. I mean, the key point now is we've had the draft for public consultation has just gone out. Normally, a British standard would have 100 comments. This standard's had 650 comments. And so there's significant interest in this. Already, surprise, surprise, it's interesting that even the Dutch have interested in potentially licensing it. They're comfortable with it. Dutch would usually lead on something like this, particularly trying to position themselves on it, and even the Swedes. So I believe, because I'm also involved in a lot of ISO work, that it will be a basis for an international standard. It's a guidance standard, not for certification, but I believe there will be, there's going to be some longevity in this. So the standard, the structure, again, I'm not going to dwell on this. The key elements to this are the principles and since the practice, 4 and 5, that's the guts of the standards. There's other guidance there around business models and various vertical elements related to business functions. Key elements of the standard, despite what I said about systems thinking, within the 6 principles the group has defined, systems thinking is one of, we believe, or we're putting forward as one of the key principles of circular economy, innovation, stewardship, collaboration, value optimization, and transparency. So these are 6 principles. We're yet to see what the feedback to those principles are, but we will be sitting down to go through all of that over 2 days. I don't know if we're going to get through it all in 2 days, but business models are important, but not the only game in town, as I've mentioned. And what I'll do very quickly here to try and keep to time for the chair is to look at some business models. And what we did within with myself and another colleague within the standard is we tried to mine all the work that's been recently done over the last 3 to 5 years around green business models, circular economy business models, and we tried to distill a lot of elements of this down. A lot of work out there. Often they're not the stuff that's being put forward as business models is not business models. the stuff that's, you know, being put forward as enabling technology, is in effect enabling technologies. Anyway, we distilled it down to six elements. This is our cut at it, trying to distill things down. So these are business models that may have a direct implication for circular economy approaches or indirect approaches. So what I've tried to do is also apply this very quickly to an issue that is front and center of my mind, because we've got a project in this area around the challenge of converting waste fishing nets and ropes into products. 640,000 tons of nets and ropes in the ocean, big growing problem. Haven't got time to go into that, it's another talk. But anyway, I tried to think it through to a practical example. And again, I was still trying to keep my microphone up here. So basically, on demand. So could you produce nets just in time? I'll just apply it direct. For example, nets just in time in ports. So you've got your net there, produce the net to on demand. Much more efficient, potentially more efficient. So producing products on demand. Mass customization can be more resource efficient. Digitization can be more resource efficient. However, having done work on so-called product service systems, it's highly complex about, your iTunes versus your CD. There's lots of issues to do with infrastructure and energy, potentially shifting from a physical product to a virtual product can be, more circular and a lower energy, and lower potential energy, potentially. Not every time, necessarily. It depends on a lot of factors. Reuse and extension. And I wasn't able, and I'm really happy, if somebody came up with an example related to nets and ropes on that. I'm really interested to hear about a digital, dematerialization of a net. Very tricky. If anybody has any bright ideas, please tell me. Third model is product life extension, reuse. So designing products to be new, more durable. Issue with nets anyway, the problem is they are very durable. They'll sit in the ocean for a long time. So, it's a sort of plus and minus there. Reuse, so could you cut out sections from the net and reuse them for cricket nets, football nets, in buildings, etc. So straight reuse, cutting into application. Modular design, could you design the nets to be easier to disassemble? So a section of the net breaks down, you just extract that net, you just repair that section of the net. So could you design a new form of net that's more modular? Remanufacture, so could you actually set up systems whereby the manufacturer sold the nets, and within that package they offered take back and repair. So you're not just selling the product, you're selling the whole system to extend the life of the product and the materials within it. Product service systems, again, complex area, many elements to it. So this is, for example, could you lease the nets? Rather than outright sell, you sell a long-term relationship, customers or fishermen would lease the net, and within that deal, again, they get repair, replacement, et cetera, et cetera. Could you actually look at performance-based nets within a product? So you look at the function of the net. At the moment, that's what we use to catch fish. Is there another way that is more resource efficient or low carbon that we could catch nets? If the function is to productively catch fish, I don't know what the function is, could we come up with an entirely different solution that isn't fishing nets, that's maybe using less material? Again, very happy if anybody has any ideas on that. And just in closing here, there are other business opportunities around maybe sharing economy, collaborative consumption, have some challenges sometimes with the sustainability of those models. But for example, could fishermen who aren't going out every day rent their nets to other fishermen, for example, rather than those guys who are often very, you know, they don't have much resources. Are there other ways that you could utilize those products and those materials, you know, more effectively? Could you also set up sharing platforms where a series of fishermen in a port community could actually rent or lease or buy the net, and then they set up some collaborative approach to share the nets within that community? So, sorry I had to go through that a bit quick, but there is various mechanisms that one can potentially deliver value in different ways to customers. So I will shut up there, and hopefully that's roughly to time, and back to Peter.
Thank you, Martin. Let's take one question, if there is one. One burning question. The other thing we're going to do, Martin will be moving around the tables. There'll also be opportunity in the feedback for Martin to input further. But is there one question somebody would like to ask, burning question, before we get into the roundtable discussions? Okay, you've stunned them into silence, Martin. So thank you very much, Martin. That's very helpful. There will be opportunities to hear more from Martin over the remainder of this workshop. My interest in organising events is very much to hear the voices of the people in the room, and that's why we've structured this workshop as it is. So what we're going to do next is for you to think about some questions and discuss them together on your table groups. And at the end of that, we'll have a plenary feedback from each table, very brief, so that you can hear what other people have thought as answers to the questions. So what I will do is explain the process we're going to undertake, and there will be the questions will appear here on the screen. There will also be some people on each of those tables, each of your tables, one of whom is a facilitator, and I'd just like to ask people who are facilitators to put their hands up. So you now know who the facilitator is on your table. And there is also a note taker on each of the tables. If you wouldn't mind putting your hands up, note takers. Thank you. If there is one table, I'm not sure, is there one table without a note taker? Okay. Where's one? Oh, you're taking notes there, that's okay. There's another, okay. Well, you may move to this other table in a minute. Okay, thank you. So the questions are split into two. On top of that, the note taker is going to distribute copies of these questions. So let me just read them out very briefly. You'll have a chance to look at them further, but we're splitting into two. The first set of questions is around the circular economy based on your knowledge and what Martin's told you. And the second one is to do with the network, the thought about creating a circular economy network in this region, in Sussex, let's say. This is split 50 minutes on the circular economy and 10 minutes on the network. So rather than read out the questions, so they'll be in front of you, what I will tell you is the process. There are flip charts around. So when you start, grab a flip chart. Not yet, wait. Don't go yet. If you could start by introducing yourselves to each other briefly, so you know who's on the table, and then get into the questions. The facilitators will keep things moving. They'll make sure that people speak as they wish to speak. So if somebody isn't saying something, they'll give you the opportunity to speak should they wish to do so. And during the time of just after the introductions, the facilitator will ask for a volunteer to write up the outputs of the discussion, which are quite specific, onto flip charts, and then also ask for a volunteer to present those outputs in the plenary. So So you have been warned that this is very much participatory. Then I will also give you 10-minute and 5-minute warnings at the end of the first set of questions. I think that's it. I think we can probably... So if you arrive late and aren't at your table, please go to the table you are assigned to. And I don't think we'll combine tables. I think we've got enough people on each of the tables. So I think if it becomes too wieldy, I mean, certainly this group, somebody might like to move across to another group. Feel free to do so, just to balance the numbers. Okay. I won't ask any of these questions. If there are questions, ask me specifically as we move around. So please go. You did fine.
It's getting business and levels across to people. They have to work on
it. Yeah, and I think this is what. Yeah. They've got information. We can go around and encourage them to read what I gave out as
It's sort of interesting because it's a mix of SMB types of Cedar people. Cedar.
Oh, yeah. Is that Matthew?
He knows it's you deeply.
Yeah.
No, he said he was part of a big waste market development advisory group that was part of the Sussex. He was a policy guy, quite influential. Just in our fantastic here. Cambridge and here, maybe. And then there's SMEs.
We have the Melon MacArthur Foundation, somebody from the Rosemary here with a glass on her face, which is from the director of Disruptive Business. So she's the new part of the government has formed.
Oh, so this is actually physical new?
It is, and I think someone said they got £220 million worth of funding. So she's here because Jenny, sitting next to her, knows her colleague who couldn't come or didn't come here. So she's coming on this, and people from the London Waste Recycling Board. Steve. So a couple of them not turned up. Yeah, it is a real mixture. The Worthing Council over here is Brighton and so it is a really good mixture. I'm really pleased with the mix.
And then, was it recognised you like
Yes, that's right. He wasn't supposed to come, but he is here.
Yeah.
From places.
And there's a couple.
I was going to turn Skype on. I'll turn this on.